Café Rollist is your caffeinated tabletop RPG break. It started as our exclusive Patreon show, but following a survey with our supporters, I am happy now to share its most recent episode here with you. If you enjoy this show, please consider checking out our archive of 100 or so additional episodes, which are still exclusive on Patreon. Hello, another Café Rollist and the last of our series dedicated to Road to Session Zero Con. We are Thursday and it's happening this Saturday, January 30th. Everybody, please, if you have not yet registered to that event, and come join us in the beautiful 2D world. I think just walking around the convention is going to be sort of a game. I think there's even a treasure hunt, but more about that in a minute. I am joined today by Dem Mother. Hello, how are you?
Oh, hi. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. It's pretty good weather today.
Great. Where are you based, actually?
Oh, I'm in Davao City. That's in Davao del Sur. We're kind of like in the Mindanao region. So like in the Philippines, there's like three regions. Luzon, where the capital is, Manila, and then Visayas, and then Mindanao. So I'm in the south side.
Cool. What does your... We got two ice-breaking questions on the Café Rollist. What is your routine like at the moment? What do you do? What time do you wake up? And what's the first thing you do? And how does your day goes?
I'm a bit of a workaholic, so I'm a bit ashamed of explaining my routine. But I do have a graveyard shift. So usually when I wake up, usually it's around noon, because like I would sleep around 7 or 8 after the shift. So usually my day starts at noon or around the afternoon. And the first thing I do when I wake up is, of course, take care of my cat overlords. I have 4 cats. And then, you know, after I get things sorted, I immediately go to the PC, because most of my work is here. I immediately check on my community. I'm one of the managers in the community of Dudes and Dice Davao Discord server. I try to check on the kids. I check on my messages, like checking most of the time. It's just making sure everything's all right with the kids. Sometimes they would share when they see me go online. It's like, hey, Ma. And, you know, the usual interactions. And it depends on the day. I almost always have a game run for the day. I run a lot of campaigns for newbies. So I have 3 tables for Eberron. So depending if it's a Monday or a Saturday or a Tuesday, I run that. And if it's a Wednesday, I do a stream with some friends, Call of Cthulhu. And then if it's on a Tuesday, I would do another campaign with some kids. And if it's a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I run another play by post. So it's like just text based. So I'm doing a lot of game events during the afternoon, and then I go to work afterwards. So yeah, that's pretty much most of my day. And in between, I would check on the house and, you know, do some gardening, because we do have some this lawn, and I'm trying to figure out how to plant more things. We got some, like, I forgot the English term for it. We have alugbati and lemongrass and stuff like that. So pretty busy.
So are you one of the founders? What's the story behind Dudes and Dice Davao? Or did it start it? And what is it, actually?
Thanks for that great question, actually. It's kind of like a funny story to share now, looking back. Because when I started out, 2015, I was invited to play Pathfinder First Ed by a writer friend. I was mainly a writer, and I was part of a writing group. And then he was like, hey, would you try like role play? And I was like, okay. And then like I joined, and it was like an all guy group. They kind of freaked out, which is weird. Looking back now, it's like, it's quite normal now to see girls play. There's a lot of female players now. But back then, when I joined that group, it was like, I'm the only chick there. Right. So
there's a bit more, but still not enough.
Yeah, I mean, in my community, there's a lot more girl players, so that's great. And then during that time, 2015, I learned Pathfinder. So I went through 3.5 and Pathfinder first. That was my first system. And around 2017, I realized, like, okay, I'm not really into the Munchkin play. I'm more into the storyline creating worlds, narrative-based. You kind of figure out that it's not all about the numbers and trying to get a crit and trying to get all that damage to kill that one thing in one shot. I kind of asked my friends, like that group, hey, maybe we could open up our tables, the one we open up on Fridays and Saturdays, because like we used to play in this cafe. It was owned by an American named Sam, really cool guy. He let us rent the entire, well, not rent, he just let us stay up there and we get food. And then we play there every Friday and Saturday. And I told them, hey, maybe we can open tables to other people. And the first thing they said was, nah, no one's interested in this thing. I'm like, are you sure there's no one interested in the city? I mean, there's us. And they were like, they had this mindset of, oh, we're the last of our kind, because like the fifth ed came in. And oh, wow. I was so confused with that mindset. I was like, what the heck? And then as a challenge, I was like, it got the conversation, which is, I always remember, it's like, you're never gonna get to 50. You're not even gonna get to that number of interested people who's gonna play tabletop RPGs. And I was like, okay, is that a challenge? So I ended up making Dudes and Dice, Davao. It started with me and that group, and it ended up with just me and my current boyfriend, who sadly, they did not agree to me, like I should open tables to people and run games for people, you know, get them into the hobby. And I called it Dudes and Dice because, you know, the moniker, one of the dudes, you're like one of the dudes. And I wanted to change the name, like, you know, the naming sense changes over time depending on the use. And I wanted dudes to be like an all-encompassing thing. It's not just a guy thing. It's like girls can be in it, non-binary can be in it, LGBT can be in it, or dudes. So it's like a thing that I did. Because it's funny, because it's Dudes and Dice and the main person is a female. So it's pretty funny when I tried to challenge that. And 3 years passed and I'm happy to say that we beat the 50 number. We're already at 250 players.
Wow, 250, congratulations.
Yeah, and it's like a local community, and we tapped into other places as well. Like in Manila, I have Manila Den Kids, and I have Cebu Den Kids. So it's like, it's really nice that we grew that big, because like it was just a matter of openness to get people into the hobby.
So did the original members came around the idea of playing other editions of Dungeons & Dragons, or maybe even other games?
I haven't heard from them since, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
I did have some kids in there that to this day, like, we tried out Starfinder. They started trying out a lot of fun things. They kind of told me that we had the same sentiments. We kind of moved out of that group because it was like, I mean, Pathfinder is great and all, but if you're just going to one-shot that monster, it's not fun. Like, we're not going to have fun on the table kind of thing. Like, and it's all about the positive experience.
So when you say you call them kids, is that a nickname or are they literal children?
Oh, wait, I don't know. My face froze.
it's okay. Things freeze sometimes.
Perfect. Yeah. I'm a very maternal figure. I will admit to that. I'm a mom friend. There's no denying it. I'm very caring about my friends and the people that that are under me, under my table, people that I meet. I have this like very caring personality. So they like, and most of the kids like in the community, because I'm sorry for the ambiance, by the way. So with the kids, it's like they're a lot younger than me. I'm 28, and most of them are in like college age, 17, 18. Some of them are professionals, like they're at their 22s, 23s. But because of my maternal and caring nature, it became very comfortable for them to just see me as a mom figure, and they know that I'm very protective of them. And like, if anything happens, like most of the time, there's a joke around the community where it's like, oh no, mom's coming with the chancla, you know, the chancla, the slipper. So there's that joke that, because I have this like that loving care, that tough love kind of thing, like I'm not gonna put up with any behavior in the like in the server that if somebody but it's all jokes and fun and stuff, so it's like I just really liked taking care of people, so it didn't feel wrong when younger people would call me mom. But I always ask the older people, like, if they're okay with, you know, calling me Den Mom, because like I'm just known as Den Mother. So it's always a conversation of, are you guys cool with, you know, you don't have to call me that, I'm Mars. So yeah, it's just like it comes, like when you get in the community, like you understand immediately why, like, I'm Den Mother. I would immediately greet you and then like ask if you guys had dinner. Like, I always check on them because sometimes they skip their meals, which I don't like. So yeah, it's just more of a caring personality, I believe.
So how did you manage, I'm not aware of the exact situation in the Philippines at the moment, but I presume you moved most of your games online due to the COVID situation, or did this transition happen?
With the COVID situation, we were forced in the, unfortunately, we were forced to play online, but I was already starting it around December. It just didn't pick up until the COVID time. And the thing with the server was, I wanted it to be like, there's a lot of shy kids. Like, I'm in a place in like where it's a very conservative place, and there's a lot of shy kids, and our internet is, sorry for the word, it's crap. Mm-hmm. And I kind of found a way where they're very comfortable in doing play by posts. And if I can give that to them, like if I can like provide a way for them to play without them having to break their comfort zones too much, not till they're ready, like I gave that to them for during the tech space, like the play by posts. And that's when the server picked up. Actually, the only reason why the server became that big is because like we partnered up, we opened ourselves to a lot of communities that were open as well as us. Like RPG Cebu, they had an event during COVID and they invited us, and then we helped them out, and that's how we branched out. Checking if it works.
Yep, oh, the camera is working again. Yeah.
Yay. So yeah.
So play by post and play via text. First of all, I think it's getting much more popular recently. And in my last episode, I was interviewing a French team, a Canadian French team developing a tool called Tails, which you can find at mm-hmm. rp.gg/Tails. It's linked in the, I linked it in the description, which allows this type of game. It's a nice tool. I like plugging people, but play by post, play by text, it's sort of going full circle towards what brought you to tabletop in the first place, which seems to be writing. So how does your activity as a writer and your hobby in tabletop interact?
Yeah, it did. One of the things I'm very proud about is like how much the text-based scene can still create a lot of reactions. Like I had a lot of shy kids. I played Persona. Like I did the way I pulled them in, because they would never try the games, because that's how shy they were. I put a game in a fandom setting. Like I'm currently doing campaigns like Persona and DC Comics, and they create characters in that world and they use different styles for that. And it seeing them grow out of it, like the shyness and like being very confident with themselves and then becoming part of the community, that's always been a great like I realized that it doesn't have to be voice all the time. Like I actually started when I started my tabletop experiences. I actually started out online because in 2015, because I was in Manila, I was in the capital working, and then the people were in Davao, and then our DM was in our GM was in Singapore. So I was like, I was already used to the online setup, and then I got into the physical tables around 2017 to 2020 before the COVID thing. And our last game, I believe, was like in Feb. And then we all just moved into the online scene. And the great thing about that is that everybody started to help each other, like without me having to say, hey, help them out. Like they were more than willing to help them out transition into the tech scene. Like, hey, get your character through this bot and stuff. Like they started to help each other, which was really great because the online scene helped a lot of kids in their own way because everyone's online now. Everybody's cooped up and it's not really nice. But when you find a community that helps you out to, you know, try to get your mind off the stress of the day and just be able to play for a bit, it's really great. Like, I do believe PvP is great. Like, I'm glad it's picking up steam.
So do you help or did any of these kids move into writing and maybe sharing their written work, moving, I don't know, like into fan fiction or this sort of thing? I don't know what the fan fiction scene is like for Persona 5 and DC in the Philippines.
Oops, hold on. I'm sorry about that.
No, don't worry. It's absolutely fine.
Ambiance.
Yeah, that's a soundscape, you know. I'm missing recording at conventions, and when I recall at convention, I got this blanket of soundscapes in the back. I miss that, so it's fine.
Yes, yeah, sorry, you just put a card there. But going back to your question about the kids, we actually have this thing called in-character musings. It was started by one of the writers, the main writers in our group. We have this channel where they write as their characters, their thoughts, their feelings, like a POV. And it's super nice, like, seeing how extensive the lore gets. Like, that's the most active channel I've seen. And me as a writer, I am so happy that I hear kids, like, I don't write. Like, when you meet them at first, like, I don't like writing. I don't want to do writing. But when they got into getting to know their characters, the personality, and meeting other people and interacting with them in PvP or in-game, they start to write stories, backstories. You suddenly find out, oh, they have a family tree. Oh, suddenly there's, like, you find out his backstory that he used to be part of, like he was one of the keepers of the gate or some stuff. And I'm just like, this is really good stuff. Like I wouldn't even think about that kind of writing, and seeing the kids write that, like, and it's like, it's not just like short sentences, it's like paragraphs, like, wow. And there'd be like chapters. It got to the point that there was so much, and I'm trying to keep up with all their stories, but I always encourage them to give, like, I always tell them, give me your stories, like, when they're under my table. I want to know what your character is, if you have any notes about them, stories of their past. And they get very engaged about it, like, hey, so my character was from Moolmaster, and, like, he traveled to Silvery Moon, and then that's where he met, and they're, like, seeing that kind of creativity just from the interactions they made. Even joke characters have backstories, like, that is amazing, like, for me, as a writer, seeing that, and the kids are doing that after a few games. It's just great.
So do these games and writing take place in English or local languages in the Philippines, or both?
It's actually English most of the time, but we sometimes slip into the vernacular. Like, we call goblin Bisaya. So, oh, he's speaking goblin. Like, sometimes we would blurt out, like, because we can't help it. It's our mother tongue here. So we would really just suddenly blurt out some kind of, you know, oh, he's speaking goblin. So it just became like that. It's like we got used to doing it in English, but there we do have some significance putting Bisaya in our place. And like most of the time, like when the Davao peeps would talk, the Manila kids would be like, what are you guys talking about? Like in out of character, like, or like outside of other chats. And we would like have to explain, oh, okay, this is what we were talking about. And then they start to learn our dialect. And oh, that's wow. Great. Because like, you know, they're not just limited to, that's how they find out words like padayon. Like, it got to the point there was like a Filipino homework and they were like, hey, what's a Bisaya word? For like, can you give me a Bisaya word? Because I'm trying to use it for my homework. And that was like just great. Because like, sadly, in the climate now, it's very hard for like some folks to get together, especially if they find out like, oh, you're from Mindanao or oh, you're from Luzon. Like, there's kind of this political climate, unfortunately. So seeing a kind of group that can get together and just like, even if with a different dialect, different groups, it's like, if there's an interest, there's no hostility towards it. So that's always great for me.
So, and you were telling me, I'm going to have to go look at my dinner, which is stewing right now. But yeah. Before I go, I'm going to ask you a question so I can run while you fill the gap. So you were telling me earlier that you're working on your own gaming material. Is that an adventure for Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder? Tell us about it. It's starting to move, so I'm going to be right back. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. Save the meal. So the module that I made, actually, it came from an idea because the kids, the ones in my server, they like After Dark games. So After Dark games is basically you run a game past midnight. We call it After Dark. And it's always, and we like our horror. We like our horror stories. We like spooking each other, like campfire horror stories. So there was this one story in our city, in our place, where it's like, oh, did you hear, like, oh, if you make a horror story about Durian Hotel, and one of the kids challenged me about it. And that was like months ago. Like, that wasn't even on my mind that I would end up writing a module about it. The funny thing was, I was, after I experienced, there's a player in the community in the Call of Cthulhu tabletop RPG Philippines, Paolo, he ran Tiempo Muerto, which is a Call of Cthulhu game in the Visayas, the Western Visayas in the 1950s. And for me, that was like, oh my God, that's a creepy story and it's so nice. There's a horror story in the local scene that isn't like just the Manila scene. And that really, I gravitated towards that. And he kind of tagged me on the last day, that session zero con was closing for the game designers. And I was like, what the heck? I'm going to send my idea. It was still an idea. It wasn't a module yet. So I pitched my idea. I gave my description there. And I was like, I was not expecting a response after that because I don't have like a PDF yet. I didn't have the cover art or whatever. And I just gave my idea. This is based off an urban legend here. And then I get the email like, hey, you're in. I'm like, oh no, I have 2 months to write this now. But the kids gave me a great challenge too. Basically, they got inspired because when I did the game module, they wanted to do game modules too. They wanted to write their own thing now because, oh, Dead Mother's doing a game module now. She's doing a spooky story. She took my challenge. Oh no. So like, I was like, I did this, you better do this too, like in the future. So, so going back to the thing I wrote, I really love Call of Cthulhu. I'm a horror enthusiast. That's one of the genres that I believe, like, gets a very visceral, raw human reaction. Like, and I like that some TTRPGs, like after Pathfinder, I tried a lot of World of Darkness, vampire games. I ran a lot of it. Then I got the 5e. So I was really into the horror elements, like scaring them with consent. that's the way I put it. And the one of the stories here, I find out later on when I was doing my quick research, I had a friend that's a historian here. There was a lot of like untold stories here in Mindanao. There's a lot of horror stories that's very common to us. Like, if we can just share it, but if other people hear it, it's like, how is that real? How is that stuff? And like, some of the bits and lore that I put in here is actually a mix of urban legend and an actual legit scary thing. Like, that's something that happened here. And you don't get to read about it in history books. You only get to hear it from the locals. You only get to hear it from like people who tell the story. So I was inspired with a bit of the horror to tell untold stories that were really legit horror stories. Just try to imagine like that actually happening. For us, that's a normal thing. Like that's oh, that happened. For somebody outside, it's going to be like, what? This is something? So I just wanted to create that story. And hopefully after this, now that I have more time, I can do like a Mindanao Gothic where there's a lot more untold horror stories that I can, that are modern scenes. They're actually like, I guess one story I can tell is that without scaring too much of the people, there was this instance where there was a Catholic priest. Since it's called Cthulhu, I'm sorry, content warning, gore. There were two cult brothers who went so mad that they kind of butchered the priest and danced around with his innards. So that was an actual legit story. And like, you know, you're just thinking, that's messed up. That's a legit thing. But try to imagine that in a Call of Cthulhu scene. It kind of works. And you're telling a story and you're kind of, in a way, documenting those untold stories because you only hear it through word of mouth. And I guess I just wanted to do my own contributions in a sense, like starting with a small story that I had, and then hopefully in time we'll get to more stories. So it just started out as a challenge that turned into something more, which I'm very happy about.
Really love how Call of Cthulhu is a cool setting to be localized. I mean, we have Reign of Terror during the French Revolution. I know there are more supplements set in France and Spain, which are coming. There's Berlin, Wicked City in the 20s in Berlin, or maybe, I think it's the 20s. You got a Harlem Unbound in Harlem in the US, written by a black author about black history, which are untold. So I think it's great that around the world, Call of Cthulhu inspires people to write about their own area and their own untold stories. When is it going to be available? So will it be available by this Saturday, you think? And where will it be available?
I have the PDF already. Like, I already have it written. I am planning, there's this thing called a Miskatonic Repository Circle. I'm hoping to submit it there after the Session Zero Con. And maybe like after all the amount of playtests, because I really care about the input of the players. The story that I have in my mod went through a lot of revisions because I really care about feedback. So I want by the time it gets to the repository circle, or if it gets to other publishers, that it's like it's something that not only gives an experience of the local scene, no one feels too alienated, because like one of the worries I have, which is valid when you're posting these kinds of things, not everybody has a different kind of version of their horror. Like a horror version for us is like superstitious spook factors. You see, like, just seeing something you're not supposed to see already freaks us out. For somebody outside, it's just like, okay, it's probably something like a trick of the eye, or like there's always rationality or logic, and they're not easily phased. So it's like, how would you introduce like folk horror, like something rural horror that's very horror to us, to a global scene? So I hope that somehow like it would be treated as its own thing. Like I didn't want to make it too like westernized just to make it spooky. So I just wanted to keep the flavor of it. And that's kind of like one of the worries why I don't want to publish it yet. Like, but then again, I think once I get like more reception from the players, and with this event, thankfully, like they gave me this opportunity, I can finally publish it somewhere, like either itch.io or the repository circle.
Yeah, I'm about to try to publish my own first gaming content. It's a full mini game But yeah, I was advised by Jason Pitre, who have a rather cool game design launcher. I recommend you join it, and anyone into game design watching this, the Jason Pitre game design launch is really cool and entirely free to join, and it's just an open forum for people to chat and discuss their work and bring questions. But what they were telling me is how itch actually is a place for development. People there apparently are very open to unfinished projects, and by publishing a first version there, then a second, then a third, you can actually use the platform itself to progress with your project. So at first, I really pictured releasing something quite finished. Now I think I'm gonna release a version without the graphic design to see how it goes, and also because I have a financial trouble at the moment, so I cannot pay for a graphic designer. So just to say, yeah, go ahead. Don't be scared, and go ahead, do it. Yeah, we were actually talking about legends from Southeast Asia with another guest on this cycle, Road to Session Zero Con, with ZXU, because I had seen recently a YouTube sort of short video talking about the mythology of the Pontignac. And I think I will invite you to be my second guest when we do a RPG Academy film studies about the 2003 or 13 Pontignac movie. That would be interesting. But it's interesting how horror also is often used. It's been used in many countries, especially think of Spain, as a genre to tell stories which the mainstream re d doesn't really allow to discuss, even difficult topics. In the case of Spain, it would be the topic of the Spanish Civil War and so on. So yeah, horror has a lot to offer, I think, in terms of exploration. Is Dudes and Dice Davao having a stand at Session Zero Con? What have you planned for the event?
This is like a really new scene for me. I'm currently the like I'm thankful at least that the artist, the one that made the cover art and the art within the book, she joined with the pair, Noble Bear joined me. So we kind of worked on like basically helping each other with our booths. They kind of used my avatar. They made an avatar of me. They're also my den kids. I'm really happy for them that they've been going through a lot of conventions showing their art. They're really talented, and I'm honored to have been partnered with them countless times for multiple events. For now, I'm actually Dudes and Dice. Like, of course, I'm going to be representing them with my booth, and I kind of want to focus more on like getting the story out, like getting more stories told about the Mindanao scene. Like, I really want more exposure for that. So I definitely, like, if anybody drops by my booth, I'll probably have some fun discussions about it. If anybody does Q&As, I probably might do a mini stream in my Twitch during the event, just taking in some questions. And I'll probably pitch a bit of like the events of Dudes and Dice. Like, we have ongoing events. We have an event on February 7th, Nikon. It's like a Knights themed non-D&D mini con. It's just a mini con. We decided like we really want to get more people exposed to non-D&D games. So we kind of have those kinds of events. That's for February 7th. And then February 14th, we have ArcherCon. And we have this thing where we kind of celebrate like the people in our server. Like one of the few people in our server who's been there since day one. We kind of celebrate their birthdays and make events out of them. So I think I would just be talking, like I'll just be having a conversation with people and like basically point people to my den kids' booths, because they're I feel like they're a lot more prepared. They have their game screenshots and whatnot. So like, check their art over there, and I'll just be like mingling with people. Most likely I'll just be talking a lot. I don't be on the stream and stuff. So yeah. And the demo. I have a demo 7 and 9.
I'm very curious to see how Session Zero Con it's gonna go. I'm planning to browse as much as my son allows me to browse the event stream. I will try to record a couple short interviews and put them together in an episode of the release, like I did for CyberConf, a French online convention. I cannot meet people in person. I cannot do good conventions, so I can go to online conventions. And I signed up for a game actually. Also, it's called Mere Gods. It will be run by Tan Chao Han. I hope I pronounced that well. I don't know what I signed up for exactly. Well, I know it's a story. I think it's a bit horror as well with local mythology. So I'm very keen to discover what it will be about. Is there something else you wish to talk about? I'm running out of questions, and we don't have questions from the chat room today.
I'm really curious though, because I actually want to get to know you more. Like, I think you seem really cool. I actually read, I was like trying to look around, like, who's Callum? Like, I'm trying to look around. I don't know exactly. There wasn't much information beyond like, hey, you're London based, but then you sound like French, and I was like, oh, okay. So I kind of wanted to get to know you a bit. Like, maybe you could. Like, what systems have you run? And like, I really want to know about this Paris Gondo. I like the concept of it. It's like Marie Kondo. Like,
yes.
This spark joy. So I was like, oh my god, it's a cool concept. I just wanted to get to know you more. I guess.
Well, yeah, sure. French is my first language, but I'm not French. I was born in Belgium. In Wallonia, which is things are slightly more complicated than that, but long story short, is the French-speaking part of Belgium, and the other half speak Dutch. But I'm not very attached with the country I was born, so I identify strongly as a Londoner. I started tabletop role-playing games at the end of the 90s, in a French-speaking environment. So what I explain to people each time is how it was before D&D 3rd edition came out. So it was when TSR went bankrupt and before Wizard of the Coast showed up. So that plus the fact that it was in a French-speaking environment, it was kind of a golden window, at least that's the way I see it, when D&D was not overruling absolutely everything. It was much more balanced between games. People used to play different games rather than everyone playing D&D. The most played game was Vampire the Masquerade. The question was not, do you play Vampire the Masquerade? The question was, do you play Chicago by Night or do you play Paris by Night? So I thought in my shows I always try to encourage people to try different games, because that's what I do, because I've been playing so many different systems and games mainly by not running them but by being a player, so I don't have to learn them too much. I can show up and play them. And Paris Gondo, after interviewing a lot of people on my show, the Rollist Podcast, which is the main show, and this one, Café Rollist, is kind of a spin-off. Initially, it was a bonus on Patreon, which I would record in person with a friend during our lunch breaks. But because of COVID, I started doing it online, and since it's online, I might as well stream it. Long story short, so there's the Rollist Podcast, which is the main show, which is once per month. There's Café Rollist, which is this one, which is streamed and is released with a backlog of 3 months on the feed. There's the RPG Academy Film Studies, which are about reviewing movies through the lens of tabletop. But after interacting with so many designers and people who release their games, I thought, oh, I could do something. And one day I had the idea. Actually, it's funny. If you listen to episode 2 of the Rollist podcast, it's on the record, like the first or second time that a friend told me about Marie Kondo. It was before, so it's recorded, it's in the show. Episode 2, we already talk about Marie Kondo, and it was at the time of the book. There was no TV shows yet, or at least not in London. And when I was exposed to that, I thought, you know, my wife got a copy and I started reading it. And I mean, I respect the idea behind it, but when I read it, I was like, it's so easy to make fun of. Not in a mean way, but if you just distort, you just turn it a little bit the intensity, it becomes hilarious and senseless. Like, there's a section at the beginning with clients who say, well, there are quotes from clients like, wow, I cannot believe all getting rid of that thing changed my life. And I was like, that's great. What if it's Bilbo from Lord of the Rings who says that?
Oh, that's a genius.
Or Steph, I'm getting along much better with my husband now that I'm tidied my space. Cersei Lannister from Westeros. So yeah, and then I got the idea, well, if it's this, what game it could be? And it became this game where Paris Gondo, so it's not Marie Kondo, it's Paris Gondo, it's a non-gendered being without a body, because one day they realized that their gender and body did not spark joy, so they just gave it away. So they just have a floating thing going through dimensions, and they advise adventurers on how to manage their inventory. And the game is, you start at the very end of the adventure, you defeated the boss, you're at the end of the dungeon, you got some loot, some treasures, which you're gonna create. That's the large part of the game, is to create those objects, and you need to decide what you're gonna keep, because you cannot keep everything. You got your starting inventory as an adventurer. I know if you're a rogue, you got two daggers, a rope, a leather armor, and suddenly you're like, well, wait a second, because I found this glittery top hat with blade wiring on it, so I'd like to keep that, but I don't have space enough. I cannot carry everything, so I'm getting rid of my first favorite dagger and second favorite dagger to keep the hat. And the question is, how emotionally attached are you to those daggers? And depending on your choice, you will have more or less chances to survive the journey home, and once you're home, to have a stimulating and invigorating experience for the rest of your life if you pick the right object. But yeah, I've run this something like 25 sessions now for around 100 players.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's really interesting. I mean, I really like it. I'm very proud of it. I'm trying to publish it now. I've got an editor who should start working on that in February. I cannot wait to announce who it is, because that's someone who actually worked on much bigger project, so I'm quite proud of hiring him, but it's not confirmed.
Awesome.
I got art I want to purchase. I don't really know where the art will come from. There's this artist who already did a lot of art, which I can just buy. I don't need the artist to create more art. I just need to buy existing art from this artist, and the graphic designer who is very good also. So yeah, but it's funny how stories can come out and how you find out things about the characters through their objects, because you only create the objects. The characters don't have stats. They just have stats because of the objects. But that creates a whole story of different things. So yeah, I'm very excited about it. And if you want to try running it or play one game, I would love to.
I actually, when I read it, the sound bite of like in Diablo 2 or like Path of Exile was bumping in my head, where it's like I can't carry anymore. Like, that was the thing I like, kept hearing in my head when I was reading it. Like, oh my God, like, I want to do a Diablo-esque storyline. Like, it would fit, because, like, you know, like the mechanic of that game is like you try to grab as many things as you can, and then it kind of rejects stuff if you can't carry anymore. So, I mean, like, when I saw it, I was like, this is something I definitely would try to run to the kids. And, you know, like, they kind of have a thing for item hoarding. So, it'll be a good lesson. And it's like a good lesson / experience for them. Like, what can you keep? What can you not keep? And the sparking joy. And I really like the concept. Like, if ever it does come out, I'll definitely support it. And you mentioned films, like a film school. I definitely would love to be part of that. Like, that's
Yeah.
gonna be so exciting.
Yeah, I'm trying to plan a lot actually of film studies at the moment. I'm slow editing. Actually, I was thinking of one of the episodes. The next episode is gonna be out on February 8th. And I hope I don't say anything inappropriate, but one of my guests, they are B. Zelda from The Broadsword. And the movie we reviewed was Black Cat, White Cat, which is a Serbian movie revolving a lot,
Oh.
but not exactly around a community of travelers, of Romas. It's the border between. But long story short, at one point of the episode and the movie, there's a character who's a mother who is very yeah. Again, I hope I'm not saying anything inappropriate. It's B. Zelda who
Fine.
used that as an expression. Apparently, it's something. She said that this character reminded her of her brown moms, because those were moms with just like you were saying with the slipper, and they will hit you with the slipper if you're not doing things right. But at the same time, they're extremely loving and caring and there for you when you are facing. So when you were mentioning that, I was like, that's so interesting because we've got this character, this sort of archetype in a Serbian movie from Eastern Europe, Central slash Eastern Europe. That character is picked up as something of interest by B. Zelda, who is a black individual in Canada. And then you bring that up again, being from the Philippines. So, long story short, that's an archetype which is in all cultures, I think.
The Shangla is universal for Asians and everyone. It's like when you see the Shangla, it's like, oh no, I goofed up. So I totally resonate with it. Like the I'm a very nurturing type in a sense that I love you, but I don't want you to go down that path. That is very problematic. Like if I have the power, if you respect me enough that you're willing to listen to me, and I can like tell you like this is not exactly like there's some kids who like they have like problematic family situations which I can sympathize with, and like them seeing me as like a very like I know you're a lot better than my mom, and like oh no. Like I try to try to instill that there are like you don't have to see mother figures as a bad thing. Like it's also my way of doing that as well, that there can be caring mothers who will tell you that it's wrong, and it's not exactly good that they punish you all the time. It's not always good that they condone you all the time. There's that balance. So I think there's a good in that archetype, I believe.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's an archetype. You know, when you think like of the first sculptures that you find, it's this very motherly figure of I don't know what it's called in English, but yeah, that tiny stone statue of a woman with very motherly attributes. So yeah, I guess it's around here everywhere, and it's tough. I mean, we're going through different ti difficult times. I'm a father. And becoming a father also shone some light on my experience as a son of a single mother, and how much pressure that might be, and how much as a parent you take, yeah, you shield your children from the world, and at the same time you are a human being yourself, and it's difficult to cope with
Hello?
everything what is going on. Oh.
Oh, sorry, you faded out.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I just heard that you're trying to shield yourself from the kid and then disappeared. I was like, oh no.
My connection went to zero. I don't know what happened.
But I did hear most of it, just it got cut. But
Okay. Yeah, I'm just worried for the
that kind
stream.
of it's all good though. The one thing that makes me like I feel like I want to discuss as well, like seeing as you're a parent and I'm like a social, I don't know what to call it. Social, it's a social parent. I'm a social parent. I don't know what to call it. Like a emotional parent. I can't put what kind of parent I am, but I am kind of like a parental figure. I kind of wanted to talk about, like, you're in this hobby, I'm in this hobby. What, like, and I, you mentioned you had a kid, and I have kids. What are, like, the things that you've experienced, like, in the community that you kind of want to shield your kid from experiencing? Because I have a lot of stories about that. So I want to hear yours.
Oh, mine. It's the hobby is in the context of society in general. We live in a society, but where and when I started, things were much more toxic. The sort of match on one hand, part of that experiment match what you describe, sort of toxic masculinity, gatekeeping. It's a bit weird, but when I started, there was a lot of not ill-intended, but sort of a power relationship between the game masters and the players, and sort of a philosophy of what's cool is struggle or facing difficulties. So game masters tended to be harsh on their players, not really abusive or again ill-intended, but they saw that as the way. And I'm saying that in a past tense, but actually I played with my first game master not too long ago, and I left the campaign because I was like, okay, it turns out you're still playing the same way. The other players love it, so it's a question of taste. But yeah, I was like, no, I'm not a fan of that. Beyond that, specific things, I guess it all combined. Yeah, making things much more easier to find and integrate and express your feelings regarding what is going on and your taste. It doesn't need to be hard feelings, but even soft feelings, and be more open about that. I think tabletop could be a very positive place for that. I don't think it's always been the case. I think probably it's not always the case, but I'm somewhat optimistic about the community, at least, yeah, being part of clubs in London and seeing how things are online. On average, I think we're on the right path. But what about you? What would you like to shield children from in the community?
One thing you mentioned that I actually like 100% agree with all the things you've said. I've agreed to all of it, by the way. I like the community, like the hobby community, the Dungeons and Dragons community, specifically the Fifth Ed. Seeing that there's been a lot more accepting, there's a lot more acceptance to the kind of players that get in, the kind of stories that are being told. I'm very happy about that. And there's a lot of communities built around this system that you can partner with. Like, it's so easy to work with them. It's so easy to, like the groups from, like, RPG Cebu, Greasy Snitches. There's also, Mr. Bear's Cavern. Like, there's a lot of groups within groups that, you can just reach out and then, like, hey, back then you couldn't do that. Like I felt that I was like in that. I'm glad I was at the end of that era. Like I was at the time where I started when they started putting out 5e, but I was able to experience like 2 years of that kind of thing to not want that when I started with the community. One of the few things that I suppose like I would shield, like in a sense shield or like at least protect the kids. I want the place to be a safe space. Like that's definitely the number one thing. Like I'm willing to like protect as much as I could if that means that the space that they're in, where they're playing, where they're talking about their characters won't be like they won't feel violated in a sense. Like if I have a kid who wants to be a girl, that's fine. That's something I want to provide for them. I don't want them to have to feel like oh, you can't be a girl. Like I don't want that to ever happen. I also like there would be times when they would share a lot about their characters. I don't want them to feel like they have to be a certain way just to enjoy the game. Like what you said, games can be a positive experience, and like that's something I always aim for. So in the first goal is a safe space. And like I would hear some kids, like when they come to my community, they're already like disillusioned because like, oh, my previous group was, they called me certain things because I played characters this way. Like I played a flirty character, now I'm a whore. And I'm just like, what? Like that kind of harshness from other communities. I don't get that from other groups. I don't think it's a community per se. It's like those closed groups that have those, like something that they can work out in, like if they can realize that there's something problematic that they can fix. But like you mentioned, there's some preferences and stuff. But hearing those kinds of stories from the kids that are under my care now, it's like I'm more than willing to like defend them for like any kind of like problem they might encounter within the community. Like they feel uncomfortable because someone questioned their gender. Like I'm more than willing to like make sure that it's a safe space, but not to the point that it's harsh. There's going to be deliberation and stuff. But yeah, that's the first goal, definitely. Like you want to make sure that they're not going to feel like the world is going to be mean. That's not going to be something we can avoid for the kids. But at least when they get to play, they don't have to think about those things, like to an extent that, it's going to worry. That's going to worry them for the rest of their life. Like it's always going to be like when they come out of a game, they're going to feel great about themselves. They're going to feel confident. They're going to want to be the version that they want to be when they're interacting with people, like be the best of themselves. So yeah,
Yeah.
that's
Yeah, the thing I sometimes wonder is not limited to the TTRPG community regarding children is on one hand you need to stop bad behaviors and protect each other from bad behaviors, but also it's I'm wonder, as a kid and as a teenager and even a 20 something, I did a lot of bad things. I did a lot of mistakes. And I probably hurt a lot of people unintentionally, and it was n never really addressed. So it would have been probably better if those things were addressed. But the added dimension is that when I think about my kid and kids these days, I'm concerned about the record of their own mistakes. So on one hand, I think we need to all own our mistakes. On the other hand, it scares me for children nowadays how much something they might do today because they're trying to figure out a life which is very difficult, and then they're gonna make mistakes, terrible mistakes. How much these mistakes will stick to their boots their whole life, because there's a record of that. I mean, not even necessarily mistakes, but even you change from in Belgium, you study till the age, I don't know, of 12 in primary school, then you move to secondary school, and then you go to university or whatever it's called. I didn't go to university, but each time it's sort of an opportunity to reinvent yourself a bit, and free yourself from other bullies, or maybe stop being a bully yourself because you were in that space as someone who tried to defend yourself. But yeah, I don't know what it's like nowadays if you move to the university or the other one, and you can still being Googled, and they will find that video you made or this chat room where you said stuff. So yeah, because it's to come back to the tabletop RPG community, I had a very, very close friend who did something very terrible. And on one hand, it was deserved what he deserved what happened, I guess. Although, punishment didn't solve really stuff. But I was scared to see how something which was very central to his life, which was our group of friends and tabletop, suddenly was snatched away from him. It was gone from his life. It was like he was dead. And I've seen people online who are podcasters, streamers, game designers, for a spectrum of reasons. Reasons which are absolutely terrible, and it's, you know, that's the way we have to deal with it. There's no other way. But there's a whole spectrum going towards things which are not as bad. But seeing them cut off entirely from the community, I cannot help yet to think, what if someone I care for has that happening to them? What if I do a mistake, I do something, and suddenly it's gone? All of this is gone. My hobby, which is more than my hobby, it's my friends, it's my community, it's what I do to keep afloat mentally as I'm going through difficult times. What do I do if it's snatched away from me? And it's so easy to say, well, we're going to get rid of these people, we're going to push them out. And sometimes it's, again, for very good reasons, sometimes for someone doing something terrible on one instance. I find that scary, and I'm not sure what would be the best way to deal with that. And yeah, I guess it's a discourse I'd like to hear, but yeah, it's a very difficult discourse to have. So I haven't seen it anywhere, and I really don't feel comfortable like throwing it on Twitter or something like that.
Oh, yeah. The conversation was brought up by this, but I'm happy we got to talk about this. And like, I agree on all aspects. Like, I will admit, like, the online culture right now, especially in Twitter, which is why I don't have Twitter. Like, you were asking about my Twitter, I was like, nope. So one of the things that I don't like is like, there's a public spectacle for a character guillotine. I call it like a character killing, like, hey, step one, this person did a bad thing. Like, punish him. Or like, every time his name gets brought up, bring all his sins, as if you've never done that kind of thing. I find that it's amplified to the point that there's like, where's the redemption arc for this person? Like, there are difficult decisions you have to make for the community as a whole. Like you want to give chances and give opportunities for the person to change and stuff like that. But, you know, like, there's always a difficult decision of like thinking of the entire community, the entire group that's relying on you and your decision. And if you let that one person stay and continue with the behavior and, you know, like, affect the community as a whole, it's always that difficult decision. And it's, when they're out of it, yeah, you're always going to think like, how are they? Because, you know, they were part of the community. It's not like, you know, they're dead to you, whichever, stuff like that. They were part of the community. It's very painful that there are people that get in the community. Like, it's not avoidable that there would be problematic people. And I hope they get a chance to work themselves out. But I do believe in a redemption arc. Perhaps maybe not in this space, perhaps in another space. Like what you said, some people go to different places to reinvent themselves. I just don't agree with the online spectacle, like the mindset right now, where it's like, if you did a mistake, it's something you're going to carry for the rest of your life. You're never going to change, which kind of conflicts with the human aspect of things, which is we change. People change. People have different mindsets. And those kinds of things. Some stay over time, like some certain traits, but things can be changed. And I believe, like, you shouldn't throw people under the bus. It's like, you're just as human as they are. They shouldn't be too vilified if they can be given a redemption. Of course, there are some cases that, you know, like, it's hard to see that. It's hard to, like, I as a maternal self, like, there are times that I will be biased that if it's a very difficult topic or it's a very strong offense against the kid, it's like, it's something I would deem unforgivable. But I always hope that in the next life, or like after this thing, that they would have a change of character. Like, they have to go through something painful to change. So but again, the community can help, but the community can only do so much if the person can't help themselves.
And at the end of the day, it's about protecting others also. It's an extremely difficult thing to balance. Yeah, on that, we're going to pop because I really need to go back to my dinner.
No problems.
Thank you so much
you have a good deal.
For joining, and I look forward. I'm gonna set up that that recording for the RPG Academy Film Studies. Thanks to Mr. Bytelim, who joined us in the chat room. He was the only person today.
That's a den kid.
Oh,
that's a den kid.
Great.
Hello. Thank you for dropping by.
So, since you're not on Twitter, or maybe you are in some fashion, where can people find you if they want to reach you or find your work?
There is a Twitter for the community. One of the kids are handling it. We're just managing it. We just managed it last month. So, it's Dudes and Dice Davao. You can find us there on Twitter. That we usually post events and like projects that we do as a community there. We're actually having Dudes News season 2 coming up. Season 1 was an interesting thing because it was done out of boredom. Kids decided to go live and just read about the games and the server highlights. They did interviews. They kind of played reporter for that, which is quite nice to see that there's a season 2 now. And we're doing like a better production value for that one compared to just the live where just reading stuff and there's like shenanigans that happened in the live. So,
is that on Twitch?
That will be in YouTube. We have a YouTube, it's Dudes and Dice Tabletop RPG Dev Out. It's a long name, but we wanted to put it all there. We also have a video there of Con Save that happened in December, so it's all there. We're planning to put more production videos, like VODs is what they call it, in the YouTube. There's also Den Kids, Seth and Jano. They have a podcast that they're putting up there on Monday, so you can definitely check those out. We're updating the Twitter for that. The main source of like our updates actually is Facebook. It's Dudes and Dice Now. We also have a Facebook group. We usually post game highlights there, and we have a forever link. We finally, after some deliberation and community discussion, we opened our Discord. Versus just we tell people to ask for the invite link. We are giving the invite link openly, a forever link for people to click and join the server. I think that's about it. There'll be more updates of the events. For my mod, I'll give updates on Den Mother Plays. That's the page that I use, and perhaps in my Twitch, also Den Mother Plays. I'll give updates. Usually I talk about writing mostly in Twitch. The one in Facebook is for my video game shenanigans with Den Dad. Sorry about that.
No problem. I will include links to everything you're listing. So I will include links to everything in the description of the episode, whether if people are listening to that in audio or on YouTube. If you click on it, you will find a link to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you could send it to me via Twitter afterwards, via Discord, that would be...
Totally.
Great. I look forward to maybe running into you at Session Zero Con. Whoever watching this, if there's still time, please do rush to join us there. It's free. It's online. It's huge. There's going to be so many independent designers there. There's a lovely map. It's going to be excellent. Also, please, people, follow us on Twitch. Subscribe so I can grow a little bit my little account. Subscribe on YouTube, leave comments and likes there. I'm going through challenging times. Anyone enjoy what I do and want to even in the most modest manner support me via Patreon, now is definitely the time. So people watching this, please consider doing it. Even just a single dollar goes a long way to encourage me and help me continue to create content. And if you can do so in just as a one-off, if you prefer, there's also a PayPal me on the website and in the description of this. So
yeah.
Please, people, do not hesitate to do that. And yeah, thanks again. And yeah, see you around soon. I will be in touch for film studies.
Thank you as well.
Cheers, bye.
Have a great night.
Our logo is designed by Rolin Kunz. Our theme song is Playtime by Jazar, which you can download on the Free Music Archive. A video version of this episode is available on YouTube. Please consider subscribing to our channel there. Leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. If you would like more Café Rollist, you can also get access to our archive of 100 or so additional episodes via Patreon. If you want to be informed of everything released by the Rollist, we have a monthly newsletter for you to join. And if you want to contribute via the chat room to one of our recordings, subscribe to our Twitch channel and social media accounts to be informed of when streams are happening. Finally, links to everything I just mentioned can be found in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening to us, and remember, you are the Rollist.